The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Save big money on everything for your projects now at Menards. Plastic lattice panels are durable, low maintenance, and are easy to install. They're a great accent for deck skirting, garden trellises, and creating privacy walls. We stock a huge variety of colors and sizes to fit your project. Save big on lattice at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Nice to have you with us to start the week on 100% Hockey with Darren Millard and John Shannon. You see Alexander Ovechkin going home off the road, eight away from breaking Wayne Gretzky's record. I'm told that Wayne's going to start following him with five to go.
Right. Eight. Now, I was always led to believe 890 was the magic number. So he's got three goals to go before Wayne and the commissioner traipse around North America to follow him.
That will be fun to watch, to see the shots of Wayne in the stands taking in every one of these games with Alexander Ovechkin. Do you think that will cause Ovi to squeeze his stick a little bit tighter? Because Spencer Carberry said he kind of got a sense that that's been happening lately.
Well, do you remember when it happened for Wayne with Gordy following?
Yep. Wayne apologized to Gordy for taking so long.
Yeah. So there was a little pressure that way. But I think that that's all part and parcel of what these guys do at this level. I mean, they're both Wayne was elite. Ovechkin's elite. The one thing I will tell you is that Wayne was great in his celebration of getting to 802. I suspect it won't be near as fun as watching Ovechkin get to 895, because this guy loves. I just think this guy. I mean, I still see him in the fountain in DC after winning the cup. You know, he's so exuberant. Say what you want about Alex Ovechkin. You may dislike him. You may dislike his politics, but over his career, no one has loved playing the game more than Alex Ovechkin. No one has loved scoring more than Alex Ovechkin. And you have to admire that and enjoy it and revel in it just as he does. You know, it's one of the, I think it's one of his greatest attributes, is that you see how much fun he's having. Going over, high-fiving his kid at the glass. Mm-hmm. Gosh, we'd all love to be able to do that. And he is, and it's fantastic.
The models all point to April back-to-back between the Washington Capitals and the Columbus Blue Jackets.
You're not going into those model things, are you?
Yeah. I actually did it. This is funny. About a month and a half ago, I took the goals per game pace that he's on this year and worked it out, and it pointed straight to that home and home with Columbus, and he's maintained that pace in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, he's been more consistent, I think, than a lot of people thought he would, because memory serves me, earlier in the season he went in a bit of a drought, and then took off, right? And then people started to realize it could become a reality. What if he finishes short, Darren? What happens? Does it just become the way to launch the season next year?
Yeah. It's a great kickoff. And it'll be the talk of training camp, and you'll have this incredible celebration to start. It's not the worst thing in the world. There'll be disappointment right now.
Yep.
But it's from a marketing standpoint, the league's going to have a whole summer to put together all kinds of promotional material from players at the media tour. It's going to be an opportunity for the National Hockey League.
And you know, the one thing that has been impressive is that for the most part, it has not been a distraction for the Washington Capitals as a team.
No.
They've played so well. You know, the best team in the East right now. They have really, really played consistently all season long with some really good storylines. When you think how well Dylan Strome has played, Tom Wilson's played, Pierre-Luc Dubois has resurrected his career. Protis has been spectacular. There are a lot of great stories in Washington beyond Alex Ovechkin.
Semi-resurrected his career?
Yeah.
I think he's rescued his career.
Okay, that's good. I was trying to be positive, but not over the top.
Pete DeBoer's coming up. We've got a second here. Sharks were officially eliminated from the playoffs. I'm glad that was a great conversation, fun conversation with Ryan Warsawski the other day. But I'm glad that those two things didn't overlap.
Well, I mean, I think it was pretty obvious they weren't.
I know, but it's still awkward.
What would you have said? You're out, buddy.
Hey, Ryan, you heard the news?
Breaking news, confirmed.
I would let you do that. You're the curmudgeon.
I actually went back. I don't listen to very many of our podcasts in their entirety. I spot check. I actually went back and listened to that one. It was good. He was fun. He had a good time.
Do you think they've cut into challenging for a playoff spot by half a year, a full year, maybe 2 years? They haven't backed up at all.
No.
I don't want to overstate
they're not a playoff team next
progress.
Year.
No. And I think it's, I was going into this year, I thought it was 5 years. So maybe it's four.
Yeah, perhaps. But you know, the progress that the team has made, the key for me for this team now is what happens to Celebrini in year two? What happens to him in year two? We've seen too many great rookies plateau.
Bedard's had a tough year.
Bedard has had a tough year, a really tough year. I don't blame at all on Connor Bedard, though, but at the same time, you're right. He's had a difficult year, and it's starting to show
John,
on him.
He's been kicked out of his last two games.
Yeah.
Like, did you ever see that coming? One for yelling at the refs and the other one for a kerfuffle behind the net against Vancouver.
Connor Bedard's been tossed out. Did you just use my word?
Kerfuffle?
Yeah.
No, that's my word.
It's not your word. That's my word.
I learned that word as a 17-year-old rookie sitting in the dressing room of the Dauphin Kings when our coach Doug Stokes came in and said, stay out of the kerfuffles, and every guy in that room started giggling. And so it's been on my rotation for that long. I love kerfuffle.
Can we share it? Yeah, maybe. You can have it on the odd days and I'll have it on the even days.
I like our kerfuffles. I got one more, but Pete's here. So we'll slide over to the Dallas Stars head coach when we continue on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. 100% Hockey continues. He was ahead of schedule. Pete DeBoer's like 5 minutes early, right? Every time,
Darren.
Is that the Scotty Bowman rule? If you're 5 minutes early, you're 5 minutes late?
You know what? I actually got a funny story on that. So I learned my lesson in hockey really quickly. I was my first training camp in OHL. I was a 13th round draft pick for the Windsor Spitfires. And they roomed me with Keith Gretzky, who was a veteran guy and Wayne's brother. I was like awestruck. He was the leading scorer on the team. And I remember we were in a hotel room getting ready for the first day of camp. I said, do you want me to set the alarm, get a wake-up call? He goes, no. He goes, I never sleep in. Don't worry about it. Well, sure enough, we sleep in. We're heading to the rink an hour late, and Keith Gretzky's not getting cut, but Pete DeBoer, the 13th round pick, is probably getting cut for not being there on time. And Gretz ended up handling it for me and getting me off. But I don't think I've ever been late since, and he's been a lifelong friend since.
It's not a bad thing to be able to play at the Gretzky card. every now and then. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Even the Keith one, right?
Yeah. No. You don't use first names. There's no first names needed. What's it been like since the trade deadline, since everything went up and down and all over the place with the acquisition of Mika Rantanen?
You know what? What an exciting deadline for us. Going back to acquiring Granlund and CeCe first, adding Bischel going into the deadline a couple weeks before, and then obviously the Granlund trade. So big changes for us. It's interesting though, from a coaching perspective, it always throws your group off a little bit when you inject a whole bunch of new people in. We were on a pretty good roll there. We were winning a lot of games. We were playing a really tight game, kind of a real identity game. And then, you know, we're obviously more skilled now, but we're still trying to reestablish that. And I think there's a lot of teams probably going through that. So I'm sure we will get it reestablished, but there's been some bumps here over the last couple of weeks.
How's your finish?
You know, the beautiful thing about those guys is every one of those Finns that I have here and really, you know, in general, the Finns I've coached over my coaching career is that they're so low maintenance. They're really just point them in the right direction. Really smart hockey guys, team first players all the time. So they're as low maintenance as they get.
I'm fascinated your thoughts about chemistry because, when Jason and Wyatt started to really play and score, everybody was pointing saying, "Oh, here come the stars," and then you did make changes. And how do you manage that within the room to tell guys, "Listen, we're just trying to reward you and we're trying to get better."
Yeah. Well, I think, John, that's exactly the message. And I'll be honest with you, I think the players expected that. I think anybody in a position to have a chance to win this time of year is sitting in the room, regardless of how well you're playing, going, you know, we need to add to keep up to have a chance here. So, you know, I think our group is really excited. It's not as much chemistry. It's more of a mindset. Of, you know, the group kind of, you know, you read the press clippings a little bit. Oh, we've got this guy, you know, everyone's picking us to do this now. And you lose a little bit of that work boot mentality and, you know, that we've got to reestablish.
How involved or aware are you of what's going down with Mikko Rantanen and the hours leading up to the solidification of the deal?
You know what, Jim's very inclusive, as much as he can be on that trade deadline day. I mean, he's got phones ringing left and right, and he's juggling, you know, 10 balls, trying to get trades done, trying to get contracts signed. I mean, just on that day alone, he did the Rantanen trade, re-signed Wyatt Johnson, you know, made some other minor moves. So there's a lot going on. He called me, the first I kind of heard of it was maybe the day before the trade deadline. He said it was on the radar, but he didn't want to get too excited. He wasn't sure where it was going to go. He called me at 6 a.m. I was still at home on the morning of the trade deadline and said, "We have we'd worked all night, got a deal in place, but it's subject to Rantanen signing a contract." He wasn't going to do the deal unless he could get a contract done. What he told me at that time was he wasn't optimistic on the contract. It didn't look good. So then, you know, that kind of circled back around maybe before noon. So you're within a few hours of the deadline now where all of a sudden they must have come back and it became a realistic opportunity again.
So when do you, at what point do you start looking at your lineup going, "Oh, this could work. That can
yeah. work." You know what? It's funny. It's kind of from experience, but mm-hmm. you know, you can waste so much energy on the rumors or who you'd like to get or who you heard or who you guys tell us we're getting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I really on that trade deadline day, I try to avoid it as much as possible until it becomes a realistic thing. Cause I've made that mistake before and wasted a whole lot of energy and really, you know, if it doesn't happen, it's deflating when you go down that road and you start, you know, penciling guys in and thinking about, you know, what, how they could help your team or change your team. So I try and avoid that as much as I can.
Boy, I tell you what, Rantanen went through a lot of tumult when you consider that the Carolina thing didn't work. Dallas, when you guys hadn't played at home yet with him in the lineup, Four Nations was smack in the middle. I kind of figured he had about five suitcases on the charter. How could he help him manage that mentally?
Yeah. You know what, John, you're 100% right. And you're not even counting, you know, going back to Colorado for that first game as quickly as we have, which was last night. I mean, that's that, you know, I mean, sometimes you make, you know, that happens and you might be done with Colorado or you might not get them for another 2 months and you don't have to worry about that. He had that last night to deal with too. So, yeah, I've been so impressed with him and how he's handled it. And how he's shown up and played, and the way he's played for us, considering everything he's been through, you know, I'm sure it's just been a whirlwind for him. But you wouldn't know it at the rink. He's dialed in. He's a pro's pro. The way he prepares, his post game workouts, his pre game preparation, you know, the way he's tried to fit in with us here. You would never know what he's gone through until you start rhyming it off his last 2 months. And then to think about, you know, when's the last time a player of his stature in his prime got traded twice not in the calendar year, within a couple months. I don't know if it's ever happened. So he's had a lot thrown at him, and he's exceptionally been good about dealing with it.
Is there a way to speed up the integration process from your experience?
You know what? Well, I think we had a built-in one for sure with the Finnish guys we had here. And I think the Four Nations, John hit on the Four Nations. I think the Four Nations helped that too. You know, he had just spent 2 weeks with those guys at the Four Nations. Granlund, Heiskanen. Well, Heiskanen wasn't there because of the knee, but Rupe Hintz, Esa Lindell. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he got 2 weeks with those guys, which I honestly think, and I don't want to speak for him, but I'm not sure you get him signed for 8 years and committed to a team sight unseen without living in the community or knowing much about us, unless he has those relationships with those guys and is very comfortable in, you know, their opinion of what's going on here and what it's like to live here and what it's like to play here. So, you know, I was a huge ace in the hole for us.
You mentioned Heiskanen. Will he play before the end of the regular season?
I think it's going to be right around there, either a little before or a little after. You know, he's right in that time frame. He's actually, you know, if you go by the doctor's notes, he's probably not due until partway through the first round. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're obviously hoping we can expedite that and get, you know, and he's a world-class athlete. He's working his ass off in the rehab facility trying to get back. So that's our fingers crossed hope.
What's your favorite memory from the Four Nations?
You know what, Darren, I'll tell you what. Saturday, well, a couple bunch of things. The first game of the tournament, Montreal, sold out crowd, when they introduced Mario Lemieux, and then Sidney Crosby and him got together at center ice, you know, that was like goosebumps, you know, on your arm. It was exceptional. Unless you see a game in Montreal as a fan or as a coach, it's hard to explain the environment. I mean, it's for me, you know, just, if not the best rink in the world to watch a game, it's in that conversation. And then the Saturday night game against the U.S., obviously with what went on with the fights, but, the level of play, you know, I have coached in two Stanley Cup finals, a bunch of conference finals. The level of play was so much higher than anything I had been at bench level for before. The execution, the speed, you know, I found myself almost being a fan, you know, watching it. They were so good. It was so fast. It was such good hockey. It actually took me a little bit to catch up to it. You know, it was like almost coaching in the American League and then your first NHL game.
Really?
You know, how quick it is. Oh, yeah. It was the level of play was that high. Nothing I'd ever seen before. So that was one of those pinch me moments where you're like, you know, boy, I got the best seat in the house to the best hockey I've ever seen.
You've coached a lot of superstars, but Sidney's, I would assume, is on a level of his own. And,
yeah.
And his work ethic even shows up in 2 weeks in Montreal and Boston.
Yeah. Like that's an understatement. We had so we played the two games in. So I've known Sidney. My first interaction with Sidney, I was an assistant coach on the Canadian World Junior team. And I think it was, I might get this date wrong, but I thought 2005, we won the gold medal in North Dakota. Sidney Crosby was the youngest player on that team.
Right.
So that was my first time to actually coach him. And I'll tell you what, you know, looking back at 16-year-old Sidney Crosby and now, you know, late 30s Sidney Crosby, it's amazing how really nothing's changed. He was so mature beyond his years at 16, probably forced to be with the spotlight that had been on him his whole life. But, you know, the money hasn't changed him. The fame, the success hasn't changed him. He's the same guy every day at the rink, always has time to say hi to everybody, always treats the trainers first class, just exceptional character. But we played the two games in Montreal. We went to Boston and we got in because of snow storm and flight problems. We got to our hotel at 6 a.m. And so we had an optional skate that afternoon. You know, we're going to take the entire day off, except Sid told Coop that he wanted to go to the rink. You know, and you got to remember at this time, like Sid's going into that tournament injured. Right. He had an arm injury in Pittsburgh. There was question whether he was going to play. He played. You wouldn't know he was injured, but he really was still dealing with something. You know, I think we had two extras. The extra goalie, you know, Sidney, and he might have dragged McKinnon with him. I think he makes those guys go with him. But you know, it was a handful of guys. But to see him out there, you know, the other one was the first real practice we had. You know, he kept the power play unit on the ice after they worked on some things, and then, you know, I'm an assistant coach. I'm waiting for them to finish up, and I was going to go kind of pick up the pucks, and he started picking up pucks, putting them in the bucket at the end before the Zamboni. And then all of a sudden, you know, I think the other guys felt guilty. Sidney Crosby's picking up pucks. So it was amazing to see Sidney Crosby, Nathan MacKinnon, Connor McDavid, Cale Makar, all on a knee picking up pucks at the end of practice. But that's Sidney's leading that, you know? You know, it's just an amazing, amazing guy.
What was your coaching group like? Cause that's a, yeah, different element of integration.
Yeah, you know what? It was great. We had some chances over the years to get together before, so it wasn't brand new. Three of us: John Cooper, myself, Butch, and Misha. Four of us were on the Olympic staff that was named to go to China, Beijing. Mm-hmm. That got canceled. So we got to spend. Barry Trotz was the other guy on that staff. And Rick Tockett replaced him for this event because Barry retired from coaching. But, you know, the four of the five of us got together and did preparation for the Olympics. So we got to know each other. We got to spend some time together. So there was some familiarity. Tock was the new guy to the group. And I got to tell you what a treat to be around him. I mean, the stories and, you know, he obviously had a legendary career, but, you know, when you sit and talk to him, you know, how he connects with today's player and how he can tell stories. Him and Wayne Gretzky came down. And I want to tell this story because, you know, Wayne's getting some heat But before the gold medal game in Boston, Canada, U.S., before Wayne went out on the ice with Mike Ruzioni, about an hour and a half before the game, Wayne came down into the Team Canada dressing room. And he brought, for the players and staff, personalized hats for everyone that he had personally made up that said, "Be great." And he sat with us in the coaching room, worked his way around the dressing room, read the lineup. It was probably, one of those hours of my life that I'll look back at over a beer years later, sitting somewhere and going, that was awesome. I mean, he was just telling stories, him and Rick Tocchet, back and forth about, their days with Team Canada and, some of the coaches they had and some of the situations that they got into. So it was a phenomenal hour, and Wayne couldn't have been more gracious with his time or more Canadian and in our corner with our team down there in the bowels of that rink. So I think it's important for people to know that.
Good to hear.
Did you tell him that Brent got you out of a jam?
Yeah. No, Keith.
Sorry.
Keith. Yeah, I did. Actually, I did tell him that. Yeah. I did. I don't know. I don't think I told him the story. I was more listening to the stories, but I did remind him that Keith and I played together.
Wayne is a great storyteller.
He really is. Yeah. He had actually, I don't know if you have, do I have time to tell one of your stories? It might be out of school, but. Hopefully Wayne won't get back. But him and Talk were going back and forth. And I think he said to Talk, he said something along the lines of, "Do you remember one of the first times we met?" And Talk, said, "No, remind me." And Wayne said they were playing Philadelphia, Edmonton, playing in the playoffs. And he said, young Rick Tockett's out there. He's got hair down to the middle of his back, the big mullet. And he goes, he's chasing Wayne around, the whole first two periods of game one of the playoff series against him, and he's barking at him, you're going to get it all series, all night long. Wayne finally turns around and goes to him. He goes, "What are you doing?" Todd goes, "Never mind." He goes, "You're going to get 7 games of this every night for 7 games. I'm coming." And Wayne said something along the lines of, "I don't know what series you're playing in, but this one's only going 4.
That's pretty quick. I like that. We'll take a break. Continue with more 100% Hockey. More stories with Millard Shannon and Dallas head coach Pete DeBoer. Wayne, hearing that side of Wayne is great. I'm always interested. Jamie Benn is another guy who's quick-witted out there, always has something going on. How much, or what's it like knowing him from your side compared to playing against him all those years?
Yeah. Jamie Benn's one of those guys that you always quietly respected from the other bench. He was always part of your pre-scout. "Hey, listen, don't wake this guy up. Let this guy, don't poke the bear, because if you do, look out." So, there was always that admiration from the other bench, but when you're around him every day, you realize this guy cares about nothing but winning. There's zero ego. There's zero personal statistics. He's willing to do anything you ask him to do, if it's going to, help him win a Stanley Cup or the team win. And, and it's one thing to say that, but it's not just lip service. I mean, I came in here, he was playing 18 to 20 minutes a night. I played him 14, 15, 16 a night. He was playing on the first line every night. We played him on the third line with Wyatt Johnson, who was a kid right out of junior hockey. I did all these things, and every time I had, I asked him to sacrifice something, it was that conversation. There was never any hesitation. It was, "Yep, whatever you need." And, there's a lot of guys that talk about leadership, but this guy oozes it and lives it every day. And it's a treat to be around him.
How much do you rely on your leadership group?
Huge amount. I honestly, I think I learned that you know, probably in San Jose, I was fortunate to have Joe Thornton and Joe Pavelski in that dressing room. And, you know, it was the first time in my, you know, when I was in New Jersey, we had great leadership, but Lou was the leader of that, of that franchise. Always was, always has been, you know, he set the tone, you know, the captains followed it, but Lou was the guy. When I got to San Jose, Joe Thornton and Joe Pavelski were the guys, and they ran the room, they ran the culture, they ran the identity. And when I saw that, you know, I just made a decision, you know, why am I going to try and step in the middle of this? These guys, one, are doing it right. Have done it right for a long time. And two, you know, it's a lot more meaningful coming from them than it is from me. And, so, you know, I learned that there. And when I got here, Joe Pavelski was here already with Jamie Benn. So, you know, that just kind of morphed into that. And, you know, I rely on those guys for everything.
So the other time, at this time of year, there's about 32 or 33 days before the playoffs start. When you're plotting out your days off, when you're plotting out practices, where does rest come in, and where does, I mean, what do they need? Actually, what do they actually need to practice at this time of year, Pete?
Yeah. You know what, John, it's a great question. I'll tell you, we hardly practice in Dallas. I never realized how tough the schedule and the travel is here in Dallas. We're not near anybody. It's a 2-hour flight to our nearest opponent minimum. And we're changing time zones in our own division, like last night going to Colorado. So, you know, it's really tough travel. So, you know, I've experience has taught me, if I'm going to err, it's going to be on getting the player to the game as fresh and energized as possible. And if that means, you know, we can't practice, we don't practice. We do a lot of video. I've had, you know, part of it is parking your ego as a coach. You feel like you want to work, you want to run practice. That makes me feel good running practice. You know, I remember someone saying to me once, I know that makes you feel good. You know, you've checked your box, you coach today, but you know, are the players better for that tomorrow night? And, so that resonated with me, and I always try and err on, you know, making sure the players are in the best spot for the game when the puck drops.
How different are you as a coach now from when you were in Florida? Less intense?
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, you know, you become comfortable in your own skin as a coach at this level. I was the youngest coach in the NHL when I came to Florida at 40 years old, right out of junior hockey. Had not coached pro at all. Had coached for 12 years in junior hockey. Had played a little bit of pro in the minors, but that was it. So, you know, I'm walking in that dressing room, and it was a different era then too. You know, as far as the expectations on coaches, it was a lot harder coaching, you know, than it is now. I think I'm more fit for this era, you know, teaching, communicating. I think you kind of muted those characteristics back then when I started, you know, one, because, you know, it wasn't really accepted, universally. You know, Roger Nielsen might have been the one guy in the era, that era, that was that type of coach. But there was a lot more of the Pat Quinn, Mike Keenan types. And trust me, I wasn't that, those guys, but you know, I think you styled yourself, or leaned, at least you had to lean a little bit that way, because there was an expectation from players that you had a little bit of an edge to you in that era. So, you know, I think when you combine, you know, the insecurity one of the youngest coaches in the league and hadn't coached pro hockey and the era, you know, it definitely was more of a dictatorship. And then, you know, you throw into that mix, you know, we were a mess in Florida at that time. I mean, that's an understatement. We, you know, I was there 3 years on a 4-year contract. I had 3 different GMs and 2 different ownership groups during the 3-year tenure I was there. So, you know, there was a lot going on, And, you know, thank goodness that my second stop was with Lou Lamoriello. It was exactly what I needed: structure, accountability, you know, that rock of a leader that really took care of all the noise and all the other things and let you worry about what was really important, you know, and that was in your lane and coaching. And, you know, that honestly probably saved my career.
It's fair to say at the end of the Florida tenure, you weren't sure you liked the game very much.
Yeah. You know what, John, I don't know if I ever didn't like the game, but, it was shockingly, apparent. I was shockingly disillusioned with right. the NHL, you know, because you get to the NHL and you expect, you know, as a kid and a guy who never played in the NHL, I only played in the minors. You have an expectation that everything is top shelf and done right. And, and decisions are made for all the right reasons. And, you know, shockingly disillusioned 3 years in.
It's funny John brings that up because one of the coolest things that I saw from you in your time in Vegas was the embracement of the game. And during the COVID time, we would go to Henderson and play Friday night hockey, and you would play with the boys, both our guys and your boys in Jack and Maddie. And seeing you play with them was such a cool thing to witness.
Yeah, that was awesome. You know, some of my best memories in Vegas was coming down and beating you like a rented mule.
Okay. Just so we're all aware, and this is a true story, Pete did score a hat trick, and the last one was a rebound and went up and over me, and he pointed at me and went, I think he might have swore, and pointed at me and skated away. And I'm like, all right, it's on now. But yeah, you did. You got skills.
Wow, let's not be too impressed. A hat trick against you in a game that was like 27-26 is actually not that impressive.
but Matty is still playing at a high level.
Yeah, your son. My son Matt is playing at Holy Cross, and they're in their conference championship this upcoming weekend, and whoever wins plays Boston College in the NCAA regionals, so the kind of Sweet 16 of the NCAA hockey. So exciting time. Holy Cross is a small school, most famous alumni. Can you name them? Holy Cross? Dr. Fauci.
Really?
Yeah, Dr. Fauci went to Holy Cross. So it's a small liberal arts school outside Boston and Worcester. And they haven't been to the NCAA tournament since 2006. So, the school is pumped up, and there's a lot of excitement in the air. And my wife's flying in for the big game Saturday night. So excited cool. about that. Yeah. Cool.
I must admit, I do a lot of work in Edmonton. So to watch Florida play the Oilers in the Stanley Cup final was, you know, it was fun. But in the back of my mind, there was a point where I wanted Dallas to play Florida in the Stanley Cup final, and you going toe to toe with presumably your best friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You watched every game and you watched Paul and
yeah.
What was that like for you?
Well, first off, going back to the Edmonton series, you know, I mean, Edmonton beat us in six and deserved to go to the final. What I remember about that series is I've never lost a series and ended our season on a game where we've outplayed the other team so badly. Like game six in Edmonton, I believe the shot, I don't know what the shots were, 27-12 or 14 or something like that. I mean, it was a shame to lose, you know, a game like that. That series should have gone seven games. Skinner was really good. They got a couple power play goals, I think Hyman and McDavid. So, but you know, that's what I remember about the Edmonton series. And then, you know, when obviously Florida got to the final, Paul Maurice and I played junior hockey together. We met when I was 17 years old. He was our 18 year old captain in Windsor. We lived together, we coached together. stood up in each other's weddings. So, you know, it's been a lifetime friend of mine. And if I couldn't win, there's nobody in hockey that I was happier for, or I didn't think deserved it more. You know, when I think about the teams that he coached and the situations he had, it's very rarely, there's only a handful of teams that really get to win a Stanley Cup every year. And there's a lot of coaches out there, including a handful in the league this year, that won't win a Stanley Cup, might not even make the playoffs, but did a hell of a job coaching, a hell of a job. And I always found Paul was that guy. He just was never in a situation where he had a team that was capable of winning, but his teams were always prepared, and I always thought he did a hell of a job. So to actually get a team like he did in Florida, especially after leaving Winnipeg the way he did, and everyone thought he was done, you know, it was almost like the hockey gods, you know, smiling down and going, you know what, you spent a lifetime grinding at this. We're gonna give you an opportunity here, and you know, so glad that he got it.
So would you, like, during that series, lots of texts, or would you stay away from them?
You know what? We talked prior to the series. I gave him, you know, kind of my Coles notes on Edmonton. And then I'll be honest with you. I tried to stay away from them as much as I could. I might've sent one text after, you know, game two or three. And then I really tried to stay away. If you know Paul, you know, but when they lost three in a row, they're heading into game seven. I remember sitting, I was with my wife, and I said, you know, I really want to tell Paul something, but I don't want to bother him. And she said, well, you know, are you going to regret not sending it? What's the worst thing? He deletes it or doesn't read it. So, you know, off I go. I've got this long text about some of the things I saw, things like that. So at least I could sleep at night. It's one of those coaches things where, you know, that made me feel better. I don't know if it helped him or even if he read it, but it made me feel better. And, you know, we got the right outcome.
So, by the way, the shots were 34-10 that game six.
34-10, right. Yeah.
He needs the exact number.
You know, he can either delete it or, you know, I feel better about it, you know?
It's funny that you bring up whether you text him before game seven or not, because I'm thinking that you guys are best buddies. You're coaches in the league, that would be no brainer. But even you, walk that line.
Well, Paul's, you know, I worked with Paul. My first job was, we have our wives are really good friends too. But Paul, even as a young coach, he was coaching junior hockey. I was his assistant. If we'd lose a game, Paul would be walking out of the rink and it'd be me, my wife, and his wife 10 feet behind. And no, you know, and no one would talk to him. You know, there was a cooling off period. So I think part of that is just knowing him, you know, and I also, I appreciated, you know, there was probably a lot of noise around him at that point, you know, lose three in a row. You know, that was, I didn't want to pile on.
Do you think
but
about,
I but when, I did,
yeah, but you did. Do you think about winning more now that he's won?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. I do. I mean, you think about winning every year.
Some guys keep it like just block it out.
Yeah.
They tell us they block it out, but they don't block it out.
No, I don't believe anyone blocks it out. But right. But when you see, you know, it definitely is more real when you see that. You know, yeah. I saw him and his wife holding up the cup in the coach's room after. I mean, that was a really special picture. You know, especially considering, you know, lifelong friends. So, you know, that definitely resonates a little more.
Thanks for doing this, buddy. Say hi to Sue and wish Matt the best of luck.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Did we go overtime with Pete? I couldn't figure out if we were keeping him or no, he was keeping us.
When he started to say, do I have time to tell this story?
Yeah.
Hey, Pete, it's a podcast. Yeah. Take your time.
I don't know where Steve Spott was. Like, he must be out of town or something for his longtime assistant, good buddy, not to be in and around there. And well, maybe, because Spotter's always got something to say.
Maybe he's mad at you. You know, there's a lot of people.
No, there's no way.
There's a lot of people mad at you.
Pete's been mad at me before, but I don't think Spotter's ever been upset with me. The COVID skates that we would do were awesome, and Pete was he was one of the guys and came out, and he was so passionate about putting that third one home. It was pretty funny. It seared into my brain.
It's obviously seared into his as well. you were going to talk about the St. Louis Blues before we got to Pete.
It was one more subject that I wanted to bring up because it's been a great story in how they've navigated this. At one point, it sounded like everybody was available at the trade deadline, and they hung on to their pieces, and Doug Armstrong may be rewarded. Jim Montgomery may be rewarded for that.
Yep, they're the hottest team in hockey right now, I think. And you could see it, you could almost see it from the first game after Four Nations. They lost in extra time to Winnipeg, but they had played a really good game, and then they've gone on and been very successful since then. On the road trip to California, though, Jordan Binnington did a post-game interview and kind of made an impassioned plea publicly to keep the guys together, you know, keep this group. We think we have something special. And it does sound like Doug Armstrong agreed that we can live with it for one more year because, you know, let's face it, Armstrong's time as general manager is coming to an end soon. He's only going to be manager for this year and next before Steen takes over, Alex Steen. And so from that perspective, you thought, hey, Doug might try to blow it up and win quickly, but I think he's been very respectful of what the players wanted, how they're playing. And it's, you know, listen, Jordan Kyrou is finally playing really good hockey. Young Bull Duke's playing very well. They're a fun team to watch right now.
Vancouver's tied for that final wild card spot, and Calgary's a couple points back going into the week. There's enough flaws in each team to maybe say they can't make it, but there's also the promise that each club has put forward this year, thinking that they could turn it on. It should be fascinating. I don't know how you would pick a favorite. I think Calgary's probably the darkest horse, but Vancouver-St. Louis should be a pretty even race.
Well, so Vancouver has a game in hand on St. Louis, but Vancouver plays the Jets at home on Tuesday night. Then they go on a six-game road trip, Darren, that ends in Winnipeg, and they play St. Louis head-to-head on Thursday. So I think we're going to get a really good indication of what's going to happen by the time the Canucks finish that six-game road trip. They'll still have another nine games to play, but I think we will know whether the Canucks have sunk or been able to swim themselves to the postseason.
So if St. Louis goes 500 based on Vancouver's schedule, do you think it gets them in?
No, I think you have to do more than that. You know, the one thing in St. Louis's favor of their games left, they have more home games. And even though their home record is not as good as it was expected to be, they played better at home of late. So I do think there's an advantage to the Blues. I do think that the Canucks can actually control their own fate with this road trip. And then Calgary's got more games than anybody else. But you know what? Who knows when Michael Backlund is back? And they have a tough Eastern swing too, starting tonight in Toronto and then going to the tri-state area.
Got a lot of Gretzky talking today.
Yeah.
Different stories.
That was good. Yeah. This is the first time, though, I think I've done a podcast for 5 years that we talked about Anthony Fauci. So that's good.
you know, it was a long shot for us to get that answer when Pete waited a second and a half before.
I think he saw both of our faces saying, holy smoke. I was thinking, Holy Cross. Holy Cross used to be a great basketball school. So I was thinking, is there a great Holy Cross basketball player? You know, March Madness is starting, but he came with Anthony Fauci.
We're expanding our horizons.
That's not possible.
Okay, well, we're opening our eyes.
There you go.
Doesn't mean you can see any better, but we're opening them. Looking forward to the rest of the week. We've got a busy one. Can't wait to hook up with you again as we continue on 100% Hockey. Please like the podcast, share it, rate it, and tell your friends about the different stories that you get from 100% Hockey with Darren Millard and that guy, John Shannon. Bye, John.
Yeah, see ya.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.